south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
You know, it's funny, when people first meet me and they start firing the questions at me, you know, everybody wants to tap me for something, you can bet in the first 5 minutes they're going to ask me about crypto. You know, Bitcoin, Ethereum, Litecoin, and the rest. People want to know what I recommend for cryptocurrencies and what I think about the state of crypto right now. Like, I'm supposed to be the expert or something. Though, I'm not an expert. I was actually one of those they call early adopters. In fact, if you go back to some of my first shows, way back into the second year of this show, and I've been doing it for 9 years now, you would have heard me mention the story about an absolutely brilliant guy we call Bitcoin Dan, who came down to, I think it was my second seminar. Now, you longtime listeners have heard me tell this story before, but he came down in a Winnebago-type trailer from Canada with his brand new Russian wife. And man, I tell you, he was escaping. He did not want to go back to Canada or any place in the first world. He was planting his ass in Central America, namely Guatemala, for good. So why'd that happen? Why was he so dead set on leaving? Well, he used to own a business called eGolder, an internet online gold buying and selling business, based out of Montreal, Canada, and the Canadian feds shut him down. And as it turns out, it was totally illegal for them to do so, but, you know, government's the government, and they make the rules as they go along. So Dan, being the libertarian that he is, was so burned up about it, he said, I'm getting the hell out of Dodge. So anyway, he came to the seminar with this Winnebago-style trailer, and he said, Johnny, you know, I'm looking for a house to rent, but right now, I have to park my trailer somewhere, and where can I do that? And since I had a place in an ecological subdivision way out in the coffee fields with my own little cul-de-sac, my nearest neighbor probably 3 blocks away, so if Dan's trailer was parked in front of my house, I figured that would be okay. No one would see it. It wouldn't be an eyesore because none of the other neighbors had a view of the place. After all, we were in an ecological subdivision, basically all trees, shrubs, and tropical cloud forest. Notice I said cloud forest, not rainforest, because we're up at 5,000 or 6,000 feet. So lots of times we're in the clouds. Anyway, Dan said, can I park my trailer in your cul-de-sac just for a couple of weeks, maybe a month, while I look for a house to rent? Well, as things go, that month turned into, I think, 4, 5, maybe even 6 months. Not a problem. They were excellent neighbors. And of course, I let them use my facilities and stuff, washer, dryer, shower occasionally, you know, good neighbor policy and all that. But, you know, the strange thing was at 2-3 in the morning, I'd see the light on in the trailer. At first, I thought, man, those guys are newlyweds. That must be a spontaneous urge to procreate, you know, revealing itself in the wee hours of the morning. Not a problem. It's what Bob Seger would call jungle love. So I kept seeing the light every night, but that trailer wasn't rocking and rolling like you might expect, and no animal or passionate sound coming from the place either. There was light, but nothing but dead silence. So, you know, after a week or two, I said, Dan, what you doing out there? And of course, being a super nerd, I knew he was gaming with people all over the world. I mean, that's what gamers do, right? When you're playing against guys in Russia, China, England, you have to weigh the time differential. And sometimes addicted gamers are on their computers at 5 in the morning playing Fortnite or Minecraft with some 10-year-old savant in Indonesia. Anyway, Dan admitted to his gaming addiction. I knew that already. But he said lately the reason why he was up at 2-3 in the morning was he was buying this stuff you could only get on a Chinese exchange called Bitcoin. And back then, some 8 years ago, I'd never heard of it. And you guys and gals who are tuned in on crypto know Bitcoin's only been around 10 years, so we were 2 years in at that point. And Bitcoin was the only cryptocurrency. There were no other Bitcoins available. So Dan explained it to me, and he said, this stuff could go to the moon at some point, nobody knows when, but he said eventually mass adoption will kick in. And I asked him, how much is one of these Bitcoin things? And he said, they fluctuate a bit, but right now, $8. Though he said a year earlier, when he'd first heard about it, it was something like 80 cents. And at that point, he had thousands of them. In fact, back then, he showed me a website that you could log into, just give him your name, address, and an email, and you'll get 4 free bitcoins. Then, you know, some months went by and he found his house to rent and he said, Johnny, listen, what do I owe you for rent? I've been in front of your house for a couple of months now. I want to give you something. I said, no, forget about it, Dan, forget about it. Then he said, you know what? I'm going to give you 2 bitcoins. Someday these things are going to be worth a lot of dough, he said. And believe me, I didn't think anything of it. I thought it was a pipe dream. At the time, by the way, a bitcoin was 40 bucks. And I thought, and he convinced me of this, that they were going to go a lot higher. So I said, tell you what, Dan, why don't you buy some for me? And he said, Johnny, you don't have to buy it from me. Turns out, he said, I trained up our lawyer, our seminar lawyer, and he's now registered at the exchange, so he can buy and sell the stuff with ease. Anyway, by the time I got in, it was way up to 60 bucks. And that's when I started talking about it on my podcast. So if you go way back 8 years ago into the Expat Files archive, you'll hear me talking about Bitcoin every now and then and why you should get into it, at least learn about crypto, because it looked like for sure it was going to be the future. And then, of course, starting probably 6 years ago, I had Bitcoin Dan and Oscar Miner. And Oscar is another brilliant crypto guy who came down to my seminar and never left. In fact, at nearly every seminar, I have Bitcoin and crypto early adopters because, you know, they're very bright people and they know the first world's going down the toilet and they want out of Dodge. Plus, being that they were in Bitcoin and cryptos very early on, the early adopters, so to speak, they're definitely creative chance takers. Those are the kinds of personalities that got in early. And that's why, like I said, when I first run into new gringos and expats, including connecting with expat gonna-bes and wannabes who listen to the show or who have heard the show before, it almost never fails. Within the first 5 minutes or so, I expect to get a crypto question or two. Of course, they always want to know where I think it's going to go and what coins or ICOs to get into now. And truly, though I know quite a bit about crypto, I'm not the expert. I don't keep up on it too much, not on a day-to-day basis anyway. And the real super knowledgeable people, Bitcoin Dan and Oscar Miner and Captain Mango too, well, you get to meet all those guys at the seminar and you can fire off any questions you like and learn things about crypto you'll never get off the internet. Because believe me, these guys are knee-deep in it. They practically live and breathe this stuff, which is a really good thing. Because man, that's like a dream come true, having cutting-edge crypto guys living 15 minutes away from you. Now, I ask you, how many of you guys up in Seattle or Cleveland have a couple of world-class crypto experts you could walk right over and borrow an egg or a cup of sugar from? So anyway, the fact is, people ask me about crypto stuff all the time. And I do have my opinions and recommendations, of course, and I'm going to give you those right now. But first, let me give you some factoids about who's driving the crypto market. It's not the baby boomers, it's the millennials. You know what the millennials are. They were born between 1981 and 2000. And right now in the U.S., the average age of a millennial is around 27 years old. By the way, there are over 1 billion millennials on the planet right now. Now, the thing about spending power, no matter which generation you're talking about, the baby boomers, Gen X, millennials, or Generation Z, as they call them now, historically, their spending power really starts when they hit about 32 to 35 years old. That's when they're at their peak, their earning power, and then they start spending. Now, what they spend on depends on which generation they were. Like, for example, the generation before the baby boomers, they call them, what, the silent generation. Those were the ones that bought gold and silver and houses when they came into their prime. They bought hard assets because their families went through the Great Depression and really suffered. Then the next generation, their kids, were the baby boomers. When they hit their prime years, starting age 32 to 35, they bought real estate, cars, and started getting into the stock market, as well as financial instruments usually sold through banks like CDs and bonds and treasuries. But here's the thing about the millennials. Remember, they're born in 1981 to 2000. They, at the average age of 27 now, are just, in less than 5 years, are going to really crank up that spending machine. And guess what? They hate banks. Why? Because it was their parents that got wiped out in the banking and real estate blowout of 2007 and 8. They watched as their parents' mortgages went underwater, and they watched their parents suffer over losing half of their pension dough. And they watched as a lot of their parents lost their jobs in construction and finance or got laid off. So then, where are the millennials going to put their dough? And it's a huge chunk of dough, too. You know, a lot of them don't care much at all about having big houses and mansions and moving on up, nor are they into fast, hot cars like the baby boomers were. But guess what? They love technology and the idea of cryptos. So what's that tell you? They're not going to buy big houses, nor fast cars, nor are they going to buy CDs or instruments sold through banks, nor are they enamored of the stock market. They've heard all the dire predictions about the market. They believe it's in a big bubble and in unknown territory. So then, taking all that into consideration, let's put it this way. Cryptocurrency should be part of your portfolio, even if it's just a little, let's say 1% to 5% of your assets. Because just imagine what's going to happen when the millennial dough kicks in the next couple years. So then you might ask, which are the best cryptos? Well, my opinion is if you stay with the top 10 that have the biggest total market cap. To find that out, just go to www.coinmarketcap.com and you'll see a list of over 2,000 cryptocurrencies. Yep, there are over 2,000. And you'll see they're numbered from 1 to 2,000 something based on their market cap value in dollars. In other words, number one would be Bitcoin with the biggest market cap of $160 billion. And number two, Ethereum. It's got $20 billion market cap, and so on and so forth. So if you're going to invest in cryptos, which I highly recommend, stick with one or two or more of the top 10 on that list and screw all the rest, because chances are 90% of those over 2,000 on that list will be gone in a couple of years. That's just the nature of cryptocurrencies. But the top 10, they're around. They've been around for a long time. They're well known, easily tradable, and convertible. So by all means, this is the time to get into cryptocurrency. Don't think the boom is over. Don't think you've lost out. Even if you put 1% to 5% of what you've got to invest, it'll be worth it. As for the downside, there's always a downside. There's no 100% guarantee of anything, especially when you talk about markets, speculations, and investing. That said, on the extremely slim chance that you lose it all, so what? It was a chance worth taking. And a loss of 1% to 5% of your net worth or portfolio is not going to kill you. But if you don't do it and just sit on the sidelines and watch, you're going to miss riding that tsunami that's coming. And surely, there are huge things coming. So there you have it. That's my advice on the subject. It's free, and you know what they say, you get what you pay for. Oh, and just to give you a little more ammo to back up my claim that I think we're just at the beginning of the cryptocurrency tsunami, there's a company called First Data that does polling, and they just did a poll of 10,000 millennials. Remember, those are people who were born between 1981 and 2000, average age 27 right now. Well, this polling outfit called First Data shows that 71% of millennials would rather go to the dentist than to listen to a spiel from a banker. In other words, 71% completely ignore commercials they see on TV and in the media when they're sponsored by banks. They're just not interested. And the poll shows that 33% of millennials think that in 5 years they will never need a bank again. Why? Because of their faith in cryptocurrencies. And remember, these are the guys and gals that are just starting with their maximum spending mode at age 32 to 35, just a couple of years from now. Oh, and here is an amazing statistic. Insurance actuaries have estimated that millennials will receive a total of $7 trillion in inheritances from their baby boomer parents in the next 5 years. So where do you think that money's going to go? As mentioned before, not much in McMansions, muscle cars, or the stock market or financial instruments sold by banks and brokers. Well, you can bet a nice slice of that pie is going to go into crypto. Now, what do you think that's going to do to crypto prices across the board? Just remember, to be a true cryptocurrency, there is an absolute maximum limit on the amount that's out there, unlike dollars and other fiat currency. Just think supply and demand. And remember that five-year projected millennial inheritance figure of $7 trillion. And the fact that millennials are absolutely sold on cryptos. In fact, right now, 20% of millennials have crypto wallets. Way more than any other demographic group. Think about what's going to happen when the rest of them dive in. So if you look at those stats and what's going to happen in the next 5 years, millennials are set to pour in a ridiculous amount of money into crypto. So you can either ride the wave or kick yourself because you didn't. All right, so that's my take on cryptocurrency, and I think everyone who's got a plan B and who's moving down to Latin America has to get into it at least a little bit. And if you feel lost, it's over your head, you're not technical at all, don't worry. If you come down to the seminar, or even if you don't, and you visit us down here in Latin America, we got one hell of a crypto unit here, believe me. I still wonder sometimes, how'd that happen? But man, am I glad it did. All right, switching gears a little bit, probably a lot. What the hell's happening in Bolivia? You know, if there's one thing I absolutely hate besides politicians, government banks, Google, Facebook, social media, Mark Zuckerberg, Soros, Bush, Clinton, Obama. Wait, I'll stop there. God, I hate a lot of don't I? But it's worth hating. Anyway, on top of my hate list is fake news. It's everywhere and so ubiquitous you don't even know if it's fake or not. Like, for example, what's happening in Bolivia. Here I'm reading all these articles and blogs coming out of the States, most of the articles saying the U.S. must be involved again in regime change. Why are mainstream journalists so pro-socialism, or social democracy, as they call it? I don't get it. Meanwhile, it doesn't seem like any of them have actually had boots on the ground in Bolivia and talked to the people. That's why today I thought I'd give you the straight poop on what's really happening from people I know who've lived there, are living there now, and are reporting on it. Not in the news so much, but at their kitchen tables and coffee shops. That's where the real poop is. Now, the trick is not to get the news from the usual suspects up in the States, but to read the articles coming out in Spanish in the countries where the news is actually happening. Makes sense, huh? Not from an armchair media quarterback. That said, let me read a translated article that came out in Spanish, direct from the streets, the coffee shops, and kitchen tables in Bolivia. And I'll paraphrase this a little bit. Title of the article, Bolivian People Refuse to Let Evo Morales Steal a Fourth Term. Starts out and says, Bolivian strongman Evo Morales has found to have fabricated election results in a bid to remain in power for a fourth term. So the Bolivian people took to the streets and shut down the country until he agreed to resign. Then it says, November 10th, 2019 will go down as a great day for the people of Latin America. In righteous indignation, the people of Bolivia took to the streets to express their outrage at Evo Morales' flagrant and blatant attempts to steal another election and ensure himself a fourth term in office. Morales would have been willing to go to any length to stay in power, you know. The people, with the support of the police and military, however, ensured that Morales would not turn the country into a true socialist dictatorship, a la Cuba and Venezuela. All right, let me stop just a second there to comment. You know, the media up in the States is saying, since it was the military in Bolivia that kind of forced Morales out, it's truly a coup d'etat. Well, that's not what the people on the streets are saying. And you gotta know, the burnt Bernies and occasional Cortexes of the first world are gonna push the theme that it was a military coup and takeover of a duly elected social democrat. They're already saying it was a coup that was backed by the rich and business oligarchs who are intent on taking the power back from the people. All right, now let me continue with this article. One slogan frequently heard on the streets of La Paz and Santa Cruz, Bolivia, can be heard above the chaos. Namely, Bolivia is not Cuba, Bolivia is not Venezuela. It is abundantly clear to the man on the street that Evo's grand plan was to remain in office for the rest of his life, like his greatest friend and mentor, Fidel Castro, who he met with at least 30 separate times. Meanwhile, we hear the whining of the usual suspects, Evo's loyal supporters from the other dictator governments in the region. Then it says the Cuban communist dictatorship was outraged at the so-called assault on democracy when they threw Evo Morales out, which is so ironic coming from a nation that is Cuba that hasn't held an election in 60 years. You have to ask yourself why the Cuban leadership would be so concerned about the lack of democracy in Bolivia when their own country has none. There also seems to be no apparent mention of Morales' attempt to steal a fourth term by shutting down the nation's electoral system and fabricating results to magically give himself just enough of a margin of victory, that would be 10.5%, to prevent a second round election runoff, which Morales was extremely likely to lose to the other guy, Carlos Mensa. Then it says, the outrage here, however, isn't that Morales would try to steal an election, a la Hugo Chavez, Nicolas Maduro. The real outrage is that he was allowed to run on the ticket at all. What non-Latino countries fail to understand is that Morales declared his candidacy for a fourth term in clear and flagrant violation of the Bolivian constitution. Then he held a referendum in which the Bolivian people voted against him being on the ballot. Then he went to his hand-picked thugs on the Bolivian Supreme Court, who declared that it was his human right to violate the Constitution and run for a fourth term. Then it says, when it became clear that Evo was going to face a second round election, which he might lose, he had his thugs at the National Electoral Council shut down the voting counting system for 24 hours, something that's never happened before in Bolivia. Strangely enough,
when the system came back online 24 hours later, he was winning by just enough to spare him a second round election runoff. At that point, every man on the street knew it was blatant and obvious electoral fraud. Then it says, Evo Morales would never have resigned of his own will. He did so because the military obligated him to do so. Bolivia has a long history of instability and political volatility. Morales remained popular for more than a decade and presided over numerous years of economic growth. In the first couple of years, he did much for the indigenous population. But after being entrenched in power for more than 14 years, Bolivian voters, even the indigenous, were clearly suffering from Evo fatigue. So now, having lost the support of the military, police, numerous political allies, and the nation's largest workers' union, Morales had no choice but to resign, amid provable accusations of massive voter fraud. That means he will face criminal charges and arrest himself if he remains in the country, which is why he called in his political markers and made a run to Mexico. In fact, he was trying to make his escape in the presidential plane, property of the Bolivian state. However, his plane was subsequently seized by Bolivian authorities. At first, his plan was to hightail it to Cuba or Venezuela, but the Cuban and Venezuelan embassies are under occupation from anti-Morales protesters, so he felt it wasn't cool to show up there. But with an estimated $50 million sequestered away in foreign bank accounts, he's certainly on the A-list for the welcome wagon in any corrupt country. Now, for those of you who look at Morales' record and say he really turned Bolivia around and eliminated severe poverty, cleaned up the water system, built schools and hospitals, and repaired the infrastructure. Sure, in his first term, he did all that. But it was not him, but the gas deposits of Camari and the eastern provinces that provided the dough. Turns out, in the first couple of years he was in office, he invited multinational petroleum companies to invest in locating reserves and then reinvest in production facilities. Then, a few years later, Morales nationalized the natural gas and oil refineries, following the lead of Maduro in Venezuela. That's a tenet of socialism. Nationalize the industries, because, you know, government can run those things best, right? So, once nationalized, these industries gave the government all the profits instead of just the royalties they were getting previously. In fact, he openly admitted many times his leadership model was Hugo Chavez of Venezuela. Then, nearing the end of his second term, and the Bolivian constitution only allows 2 terms for president, he asked the Bolivian people to modify the constitution to eliminate term limits. There was a referendum, and the Bolivian people voted it down. So Morales went to his handpicked Supreme Court and argued that enforcing the term limit was a violation of his human right, and they agreed with him. So he got a 3rd 5-year term. And up to now, with 14 years at the helm, and with the gas reserves dwindling and no new discoveries, because no international petroleum giants want to come in and invest in Bolivia, not if their projects and companies are just going to get nationalized, as Morales did with the previous bunch of petroleum investors. So then, where does Bolivia stand now? Well, Morales is in Mexico, but is still calling on his followers to resist. Meanwhile, many families are hiding out in their homes, refusing to go out, as young people in the streets break windows, loot stores, and burn buildings. Bottom line, the writer says, in a nutshell, what you have here is a socialist that tried to stay in power by any means, and being forced to leave, kicking and screaming, he decided if he couldn't be president anymore, he'd punish the ungrateful masses by trying to start a civil war. All right, there you have it. A man on the street viewpoint, a boots on the ground view of things. Now, it's true, you don't have to believe that version of the story. And I'm sure in a couple of weeks, or maybe even a couple of months when the dust settles, we'll find out more, and we'll also find out how many millions Morales and his family members have socked away in foreign bank accounts. When we find out those numbers, we'll know for sure the real news from the fake news. All right, enough said about that. Let me throw in a little plug for my January 2020 Expat Insider Seminar. This time, once again, we're going to 2 Central American countries, Guatemala and El Salvador. Participants will be flying into the airport at Guatemala City. We'll pick you up directly at the airport, hold your hand through the entire week of the seminar, all the way up to where we drop you off at the airport to fly back to Cleveland. Yep, we're doing 2 countries. Part of the time, we'll be in the Altiplano of Guatemala. That's 5,000 to 6,000 feet above sea level. Perfect spring-like weather all year round. No heating or air conditioning needed. Then we'll spend a little time at the Pacific beaches of El Salvador. Every day, we'll have lectures from 8 till noon or 1.
and every afternoon and evening, boots on the ground to some of my favorite places. So just go to www.theexpatfiles.com and click on Johnny's seminar link, or go to www.theexpatfiles.com/seminar for complete info, sign-up details, etc. And remember, when you sign up, you get a free hour phone or Skype consult with me to discuss anything and everything about the seminar or your plan B, including banking, healthcare, crypto, the price of coffee, anything. And don't forget, when you come down to the seminar, you can kill two birds with one stone, that is, get your Guatemalan residency going. But you'll have to schedule another week after the seminar to get the process done. And if you do apply, don't worry, you won't be holed up in your hotel room for a week. You can explore, get some boots on the ground, we'll give you a great itinerary, and our seminar logistics coordinator, Rita, has put together four amazing boots on the ground trips that you can take advantage of if you like. In any event, if you come down, you'll be drinking from the fire hose, and that's just the way we like it. That is the way, you know, to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your plan B. And I'm not just making that up or picking numbers out of the air. People who've been to the seminar tell me that all the time. Some people also tell me the best thing about the seminar is the connections that they make while they're down here. Hospitals, dentists, physicians, our seminar lawyer, Bitcoin Dan, Oscar Miner, Captain Mango, Mr. B, and, well, just an amazing cast of people. And, you know, I've been doing the seminars for 9 years now, and I've never, ever had one person tell me it wasn't worth it or they wanted a refund. Sure, I've given refunds to people who paid but never arrived, or just couldn't make it, couldn't get here, changing plans, but never has anyone asked for a refund after taking the seminar. So when people ask the question, is it worth it, I just point to the dozens and dozens of repeat offenders. So why in the world would they come back and drink from the fire hose again? Some, not just two, but three times. I rest my case. All right, one last thing. A couple of shows ago, I read a long letter from a millennial. Remember that? It was a young guy who said he'd seen the light and he needs a plan B, even though he's a millennial and addicted to his cell phone and social media, the whole works. You remember that one? In response to that letter, I got quite a few emails, and one guy wrote me, his name is Bert. He said, Johnny, I'm a baby boomer. And I agree with pretty much everything that millennial guy said, even though he sounds like he's really resentful of us baby boomers. But I have to say, us boomers will get the last laugh, because the way things are going in this world, millennials will never get a chance to experience old age.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.